Big thanks to Darren and the gang for driving us through the afternoon. It's Thursday the 18th of September and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, Paul Corry and Katie Kirk are in studio to talk Champions League and a breakthrough day for Ireland at the World Athletics Championships. I'll catch up with Rebecca Cray on a pivotal phase in the Irish women's soccer season, and Jeff Shepherd starts our countdown to NFL in Croke Park. If you want to get in touch, text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200 or on X at Game On 2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome along. We have a lot to get through this evening. We will be talking about Kean Phillips and his exceptional Irish record-breaking performance. He advanced the final of the 800 metres at the World Athletics Championships in Tokyo. He clocked a time of 1 minute 43, 18 seconds to win the second of three semi-finals at Japan's National Stadium. We'll also be chatting about Jose Mourinho. He has been officially appointed as Benfica's new head coach, and one of his first assignments will be against his old club, Chelsea. We'll be going through all of that. Katie Taylor has been recognised as champion in recess by the World Boxing Council as the undisputed super lightweight world champion takes time away from the sport for personal reasons. The WBC strap is one of the belts currently held by the Brave boxer following her victory against Amanda Serrano at Madison Square Garden in July. Chantel Cameron was due to be the mandatory challenger for her WBC belt. However, the WBC president Maurizio Sulaimane has announced that Taylor will not be taking on Cameron because she intends to step away from the sport for a time in order to deal with personal matters. So we'll be keeping an eye on what is happening there. Paul Corry and Katie Kirk, you're very welcome to studio. There are two games ongoing in the Champions League. We're enjoying these early Champions League games. Club Brugge and Monaco is scoreless, 21 minutes played there. And Copenhagen are leading Bayer Leverkusen by 1-0, also 21 minutes
Quick
played
fact on
there.
That one. Do you score for Copenhagen?
Henrik
Larsson's son.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jordan Larsson. Now, he's 28. He's been around for quite a while, but he's got the opener in that game.
Good for him. Maybe he's just getting going. Anyway, we'll be talking more Champions League. We do need to start, though, with the huge news today. Kean McPhillips and his remarkable 800 metres semi-final today. Katie, did anybody predict it? Bar himself, was anybody expecting him to be the one to steal the show today?
I feel like I'm going to have to eat my words a little bit. Yesterday we were talking about his prospects looking forward, and I think we were probably all thinking that Mark English was going to be the Irish athlete that we were going to see on Saturday's final. But no, it's not Mark English. It is Kean McPhillips. He, of course, won his heat, and he, to be honest, Marie, if I look at it, I think he definitely looked the more comfortable of the two Irish athletes in those heats. But once again, cruised a victory in a semi-final. I'm not sure I could have predicted that.
It was absolutely amazing. And I think the word you used there, Katie, was he looked so comfortable. He looked like he belonged. He did say afterwards that he's been absolutely flying in training. Now, people usually say that after they have done something spectacular. But he really did really fit in. And like, what about the final now? Does he have a chance, or are we just getting a bit carried away?
I mean, I wouldn't be getting carried away. I think that stringing three races together can be quite difficult, but they do have days off in between in this timetable. And I think that having that little bit of extra day to recover definitely will benefit him. And I think that the mental boost and kind of like, he's going to be riding such a high. So it's just about trying to manage mm-hmm. that between now and Saturday. I think that qualifying in first, the fastest person, well, equal fastest person to that final can only have more eyes on you. There are a few people who have dropped back who maybe would have been contenders as well. So like that men's 1500, there's been a massive change in the field since last summer and now.
Isn't it brilliant to be a young lad heading into a world final with absolutely no pressure on you? He said himself it's a free hit.
Absolutely. He said the semi-final was a free hit as well. So he's getting
and
another
the heat
swing.
And the appearance.
He said that in his interview, we will maybe hear from him in a minute, but he said, you know, he almost felt just happy to get in the plane. And I think that having that mindset of just being really happy to be there, open to the experience, that is the best mentality that you can come into these championships with. And unfortunately for some athletes, I remember listening to Georgia Hunter-Bell, who's a training partner of Sarah Healy. She said last year she had, you know, it was maybe much easier mentally. Otherwise, you get like this kind of one free year where things go so right, and maybe the next year there is a bit more pressure on you. So this is the year for Kane where he could really surprise himself in that final, I think.
Okay, well, let's hear from him. He spoke with Darren Frahill after that amazing race.
Now, Kane McPhillip looks pretty sharp now, and he's moving up on the outside. Max Bergen out front. Pernici of Italy is an athlete that Kane McPhillip will feel he has the measure of, as he'll feel he has the measure of Lotti. So Kane McPhillip's now punching himself into a position, into second place. So far, it's a beautifully run tactical race. All he has to do now is hold his position. Pernici of Italy is an athlete that I think Kane McPhillip has the measure of. Does he have the measure of Max Bergen? Kick hard now, Kane McPhillip, and he is kicking hard. The maths student is getting his calculation right. Oh, absolutely wonderful from Kane McPhillip. Oh, not just as he got into the final, he's done it like he did in his heat. He has stormed away in the last 20 metres, and just look at this, 1:43.18, an Irish record, and he did it in a negative split race. He went through in around 52 seconds dead, and he's just run a 51 on the back of it. That is way beyond astonishing. I don't have a word for it.
I have a word for it. It's unbelievable. I spoke to his coach, Joe Ryan, this morning. He said he recovered really well from the first round. He executed his plan to perfection.
Keane, just wow. That was simply amazing. Can you tell us what's going through your head right now?
Yeah, hard to believe. Come a long way from where I was 12 months ago. I was only kind of getting back after a pretty rough season that was cut short by illness. So, but yeah, all the hard work paid off there. Still hasn't really sunk in yet. I kind of had a feeling it was I could do it. Maybe not get win it, but definitely be in the running for a fastest loser if Max took it out. Thankfully he did. Kind of the perfect race that I've been kind of looking for all season. This is a good time to do it.
Blistering pace. You set a new national record out there. How does that make you feel?
Oh, huge. Yeah, I can't believe it was that fast, really. Coach kind of thought that was the shape I was coming into these championships, but again, I haven't really got the chance to test it this season. That was the first time, and thankfully I was able to execute. Yeah, delighted with that.
National record, fastest ever semi-final at a World Championships. That's been confirmed for us.
Jeez, yeah, can you say it like that? You know, I've been watching, I think before this I was watching every kind of video of a semi-final I could, so I think you might be right on that one. It's been a great championship for us so far. Had a few finalists, and Sarah and Andrew and others, Nicola. So, delighted to continue the momentum.
You're the first Irish male to get to an 800-metre final at the World Championships. Like, that's another thing to add to that list. But what you've done here tonight is just astonishing. Has it hit in at all yet?
Not really, no. I think I'll try and keep it calm until after this is over, then I can celebrate. But a lot of hard work has gone into this, and you know, I'm kind of just the finished product of a machine of many cogs that have been working behind the scenes to get me here. So I'd like to thank all of them for that.
The medical team in particular, because you had some issues this year, didn't you?
Yeah, look, everyone. I work a lot with the Institute of Sport back in Abbottstown. I've got great people there looking after me. Kieran McCallum's physio, got my calf back despite many rows over the pace of the rehab, but I listened to her and it thankfully worked out, and my other coaches, Speed and Gym coach Martina McCarthy and my main coach Joe Ryan, I think put together a great plan for making sure I was fresh coming into this. You know, maybe it's part, luckily it's quite a late champ, so it's given me time to get back, and maybe, you know, I'm coming into it a little fresher than some of the others. You know, I probably can't run 1:41, but I'm coming in here in 1:43 shape clearly, so delighted with that.
I never got to ask you about the tactics, so that one, was that always the plan to do what you did?
Yeah, it's kind of like a rinse and repeat. I think you can overcomplicate things too much. I kind of like coming in from the back, kind of hunting lads down. Cheers, lad. I had to make a big move there again at 200. You know, these guys are too good to give any kind of head start. And thankfully it worked out in the end.
What about this final? You said to me after the heats, you just want to go out there and run a PB and see what happens. You did that and more. But what about this final now, Saturday night? What does it mean for you, first of all, and are you dreaming now? Because you're certainly in that territory.
Yeah, I think I had a kind of rough few years there trying to figure out how to balance the workload of various other aspects of my life and kind of getting it wrong time and time again. But I think I learned from all those mistakes. As long as I commit to make them only once, you know, you eventually make less of them and it's finally starting to click. Don't know about the final. I mean, three rounds in 6 days, it's tough going. I'm going to recover as best I can. I mean, eighth in the world is not a bad starting point, so do everything I can to improve upon that.
Yeah, well done. And before we let you go, remind us what you're doing in university.
I was doing theoretical physics, but between labs and things like that, it was not working out. So I switched to the not that much easier course of financial maths, but it's just that slight bit more manageable. And I think I'm just older and more mature now, able to manage the workload. Hopefully.
The maths came in handy tonight. You calculated that down to a T.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said in the last interview, you know, 120 metres in 800 is a long way to go. You know, even when you're sprinting on the final straight, you still got to hold back and make sure you get to the end. And I felt the arms starting to go a little bit the last 30 metres, but I managed to keep it on the straight and narrow.
Well done, well done. Yeah,
thanks a million.
Keane McPhillips there. He certainly didn't look like his arms were going or that he was running out of speed, because he was just absolutely phenomenal. So tell us a little bit about him and just where he's came from and what his career has been like today, Katie.
So he started off, I think probably first came onto people's radars in 2021. He won the European Junior title over 1500 metres. And I think that Keane probably feels like he has a little bit of a point to prove, because the senior level maybe hasn't quite come to him yet. And this really has been him announcing himself on that senior stage. And what a spectacular way to do it. He also did qualify for the European Indoors earlier this year. And he actually fell in the heats of those, was progressed to the semi-final, and I think picked up an injury during that, which has hampered him a little bit in his preparations. But I remember seeing something and he's been like cross-training like crazy. He's been really pushing himself to make sure that he stayed fit. And clearly, Marie, I think this later championship coming, you know, in September has suited him really, really well, because he's peaking at exactly the right time.
Yeah, he said that, and his coach said the same thing, that just everything has fallen into place. Unfortunately for Mac English, though, it didn't fall into place for him today. He was third in his heat and he didn't make that final, and his national record is gone as well.
I know, there's actually a clip of Mark sitting at the side. So whenever you're in one of the small queues, so the fastest loser spots, they'll keep you at the side of the track and make you watch the rest of the races. So he would have actually watched his national record being broken by someone else. And I'm sure that that was, you know, I don't know how Mark would have felt like that, but I'm sure that is a difficult moment when you had such high hopes to make this first final for him.
Yeah, it was really, really difficult. But look, he's achieved so much already. And I always say, when you think of Mark English, talk about someone who's able to perform at the highest level of everything, being a doctor as well, is brilliant. So when is this 800 metre final on?
It's going to be on Saturday at 2:22 Irish time. So you definitely don't want to miss it. It's going to be super exciting.
Okay, so then what else happened today? There was a pretty spectacular 400 metre women's final as well. Sydney McLaughlin of Ron absolutely blitzed it. Tell us, just how good is she at everything as well?
Oh my goodness, Sydney McLaughlin-Leverne is one of the best athletes in history. She holds the world record for the 400 hurdles, won the Olympics last year, but this year decided she wanted to do something a little bit different. I think that whenever you're as good as she is, you need to change it up to keep yourself interested, to try and maybe tick off a few more goals. And I think she really wanted to do this to prove her diversity in the sport. She's been a massive talent since she was a teenager, so none of this is really a surprise. But I think probably the biggest surprise to me was actually that she didn't have it as easy as I thought she would. Paulino from the Dominican Republic won silver in 47.98, and she made a massive move around probably the 150 to go mark, and I was thinking she's going to absolutely blow up here, but she didn't. She managed to keep going, and I think that is one of the first times I've seen Sydney McLaughlin-Leverne being pushed to her absolute limit. Of course, I think she's one of those athletes, she's so good she hides it quite well, but she looked like she was really straining in the last kind of 10 metres.
Yeah, I'd say she won't admit to that though. Let's remind ourselves how that 400 metre women's final went.
But this final, could we see a super, super fast time in 48 seconds broken for the first time in nearly 40 years? The women's 400 metres final. Out in the air, out really quickly as Paulinho, out just as quickly. And what is Sydney McLaughlin-Leverne going to do in the middle of the track? She is going really, really steadily, as she always does. She looks like a metronome when she runs. And Amber Anning, who's a fine athlete, is already run down by McLaughlin-Leverne. And out in lane 9, Paulinho has just gone for it. Aitnesur always runs so composed, and she's gone past Buca Vieca, the European champion, with ease as they come into the home straight. The big three are into the last 100 metres. Where will they be when they straighten out? It's going to be Malini Parligno. And now comes Livrone with that 400 metre hurdle strength. Livrone has the edge over Parligno. What's the clock going to say? The gold medal for Livrone, 47.80. It's not a world record, but it is the fastest time in nearly 40 years. What a time! What a performance! McLaughlin Livrone is just on another planet in terms of talent. We know that from her 400 metre hurdle world record of 50.3. This is astonishing in the flat 400 metres, because to shatter the American record in the semi-final and then shatter it by about 4 metres of track in the final to win the gold medal from Paulinho, the reigning world and Olympic champion, with Aïd Nasser in third place, the Olympic silver medalist. What is this athlete like? She is from another planet.
Yeah, I think we'll all agree with Greg there when he said that she's on a different planet, but it does make you wonder how Rashida would have fared if she was in that field.
I mean, it's a very difficult question. I think that if Rashida's trajectory had continued this year, she definitely would hope to be up with it. But I think just watching that, you can see that is the first time ever that two women have broken 48 seconds, in the same race. It was the fastest ever time in nearly 40 years. So I think, you know, it would have been a very big ask for Rashida to get on the podium today. I think looking at that, even with a little bit of improvement, you had Salwa Nasser also running 48.19. So I think, you know, it's very difficult to know how Rashida would have fared. But if she'd progressed a little bit, she would have been quite close to that fourth place, I think.
Yeah, and it does seem like there was a lot of momentum in that race as well, and they were all just able to stretch themselves a little bit. We also had the men's and women's 200 metres semi-finals as well. Melissa Jefferson-Wooden is going for the double 100 and 200. She spoke to David Gillick. Let's hear from her.
Melissa, congratulations. Another run, another win. Out in lane 7, you got out hard and you got the job done.
Yeah, I feel like I did what I was supposed to do. My coach told me to just, you know, execute the curve the best of my ability when I came off the curve. You know, obviously being smart, running through the curve, but also knowing my surroundings and seeing where I was. And I got a chance today to look up at the scoreboard to see, like, where I was. So I shut it down, you know, to try to conserve as much energy as possible.
You've had a busy week. How are you feeling?
Overall, I feel good. Mentally, I'm right where I want to be physically. Sometimes I got to talk to myself a little bit, but, you know, we're getting there. I'm getting good work done to my body. I'm being smart, asking for the things that I need and the things that I don't need. You know, obviously just staying away from that. So I'm excited. I'm ready.
Well, best of luck.
Thank you.
So, Katie, can Melissa Jefferson-Wooden do the double with the 100 and 200 metres world championship? The final of the 200s on tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has been the standout performer over both distances this year already. But I think she is going to face quite a stiff competition from Sharika Jackson of Jamaica. And there are some other big hitters in there that you can't forget about. Dina Asher-Smith of Great Britain has also been going well. And Mary Josie Talu-Smith, I think, probably is the longest name in athletics. But she has also been around for a long time. And I think she could definitely challenge for the podium as well. But it looks like Jefferson Wooden is possibly going to be our title taker in that women's 200 metres.
Well, the men's 200 metres is on as well. Noah Lyles is through to that final. He spoke to David Gillick. Let's hear from Lyles now.
How are you doing? You all right, Noah? That was incredible. That was brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. More to come, though.
Was it, you just wanted to prove, was it the atmosphere? You got serious roar when you got into those blocks.
No, it was, I was planning on dominating the first 100, and it just so happened that I was like, well, I can't let anybody come after me after that. So it turned into a 19.5.
Did you think about switching it off, or did you kind of knew you were feeling good and go through it?
I switched it off with 20 meters left in the race. Other than that, no.
So there's more to come.
There's more to come, for sure.
Well done.
Very confident, Noah Lyles, as he always is. He's a great character, and athletics really shines in that Netflix documentary. If anyone hasn't seen it, it is worth checking out. Can you back it up with a world title, though?
I think so. I think that he definitely looks like he's the favourite, but I did think the way he executed that race, it wasn't what I was expecting. I think he said in his interview with David there, you know, he shut it down. He didn't. He still pushed right through the line. And I think that that could serve a purpose. That could be a bit of a tune-up for the final, or it could have a detrimental effect if he's pushed himself a little bit too hard. The 200 has a much greater physiological effect than people probably think in terms of, you know, your nerves and how
So it's not just 20 seconds and you're grand.
There's like, it's very neurally fatiguing. So he could come into tomorrow feeling a little bit more tired because of that. He has always said he's been eyeing up Usain Bolt's record. But I think that, you know, he still is a little bit off that. That was a world lead for him today. And I think he really just wanted to try and silence his critics and say, I'm here, I am the favourite. And that's maybe how he wants to enter tomorrow's final.
Yeah, that's generally the way he likes to operate as well. Katie, we do have those 200 metre men's and women's finals. Anything else tomorrow?
I mean, there's always plenty of action. Usually the last two events on the track are the ones to look out for, but Kate O'Connor does begin her heptathlon tomorrow, so you definitely don't want to miss that.
You could spend the whole day now just watching Kate O'Connor.
Well, yeah, but as we found out, Paul Corey doesn't have time to watch athletics.
With good reason today. Won't get into that. I'll be watching tomorrow.
Well, look, you can just get your robot Hoover to go on its own, Paul. You'll be fine. You don't need to supervise.
Yeah, that unfortunately consumed a large part of my morning as well as juggling my 9 to 5.
Okay, so much to look forward to. It is starting to come to a close though, and the World of Legs Championships have been brilliant. Katie, thank you as always for coming in and bringing us up to speed with all of that expertise. We really appreciate it. Time for a quick break. I'll bring you the Champions League scores before we head for that. Club Brugge leading Monaco now by 1-0, and Copenhagen have a 1-0 lead over Bayer Leverkusen. We'll be talking all of the Champions League action with Paul Corey after the
RTE 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
This is indeed 2FM's Game On. Paul Corey is with me, Marie Crow in studio. We're going to talk all things Champions League. Last night did deliver lots of goals, lots of action and a ton of excitement. Let's start with Liverpool and Atletico Madrid. If you were looking for a nice, calm, easy victory for Liverpool, it did not pan out that way. They did get another late goal because they're making a habit of these late goals to win the game. Virgil van Dijk stepped up when they really needed him to. It was actually one of those games where you're looking at all of the older players, the Salahs and the Van Dijks, to come to the rescue. The newer players obviously played their role as well, but still it was good to see that the old reliables are the old reliables. So Paul, for Liverpool, was it a case that they got out of jail or did they deserve it?
I think my eyes were firmly fixed on Chelsea. I was flicking between the two games. I think when you look back on the highlights, it looked as if Liverpool created enough chances to make it a little bit more comfortable than it was on the evening. And I think that's maybe something that Arne Slot will be asking of his team in the coming weeks, is that not to allow teams back into games. It's happened quite a few times. That was similar to what happened against Bournemouth in the opening day of the season. 2-0 advantage, cough up two goals. Two pretty soft goals as well, I would have said. And then, like you mentioned, Marie, kind of leaning on the old reliables to get them out of jail. But I thought some of the flashes looked really good. Even, I know a lot of eyes have been on Florian Wirtz over the first couple of weeks, and maybe people not seeing the impact that they may have expected. I think you got to give him time. He's still only 22 years of age, adapting to a new team. I think with centre forwards in particular, people are very quick and you can measure them off goals. I think with creative players, you need to find your way into your system. You need to find kind of pockets of space where you're going to be able to pick up the ball. And I thought there was moments last night where he was very effective in the final third.
So we mentioned that they are scoring quite a lot late on. Actually, they've scored late winners in all five of their competitive matches this season. So against Bournemouth, against Newcastle, Arsenal, Burnley, all Premier League, and now Atletico Madrid. So the average point at which Liverpool's match-winning moments are happening this season is after 91 minutes. What does that tell you about Liverpool, and how will Arne Slot feel about these late winners?
Well, I was listening to Slot's interview and he was saying, you know, it's a testament to the character but also the fitness of the players that they're able to continually get after teams late in games. And listen, it's a great habit to score late goals and find ways of getting yourself over the line, but I'm sure he would be looking for his team to maybe have a couple more comfortable games in the coming weeks where they're a little bit more of a distance between themselves and the opposition. But I think it's a testament to particularly the experienced players within the group that they can continually get after teams and find ways of opening them up and ultimately getting themselves over the line. So it's definitely a good habit to be in, but I would also think that Slot will be looking at games in the coming weeks and thinking, how can we start to keep a couple of clean sheets? Like the goals last night, didn't think Conor Bradley covered himself in glory, particularly for that second goal. He was a little bit weak in that defensive position. And Bradley's game is probably more about going forward, but I think defensively he has to be stronger in moments like that. And if you look at some of the goals they've conceded, whether it be transitions or maybe slight errors or lapses in concentration, they got to start to shut up shop a little bit more. They got to start to give Alisson a little bit more protection. And ultimately, they just need to be a better defensive unit. No surprise that they were after Mark Guehi in the transfer window. Like, you can see that there's maybe a little bit of fragility about the Liverpool's back four, but for the fragility they have at the back, they score some amount of goals going forward.
So talk to me about Alexander Isak. We did see him play last night. Was it the dream debut that he was hoping for, Paul?
I think he would have been dying to get himself off the mark as a centre forward, similar vein to what Ekitike has done in the first couple of games that he have with the Community Shield and then the opening games in the league. Centre forwards will just measure themselves off goals. Big price tag, a lot of pressure. He obviously dug his feet in to get himself out of Newcastle. It's now about delivering the business within the Liverpool jersey. I don't think last night is a game that you can maybe measure him too much. He hasn't played a huge amount of football. There was 19 minutes for Sweden against Kosovo. He played 58 last night. It'll be a find his way into the Liverpool jersey. He will come good, Marie. I've no doubt about that. And we've seen with Liverpool in the league and last night in the Champions League, they create so many chances. Like, he's going to be on the end of things. He's got a great supply line with whether it be Gakpo, Salah, Florian Wirtz. So much attacking flair going forward, even from the fullback positions, that Isak just needs to keep himself fit. You know, the games will come, the goals will come, and he's shown while he was at Newcastle he can score, you know, different types of goals. Back to play, turn players, running behind, he's good in the air. He will come good. It's just about getting the minutes into his body and getting him match sharp again, because he's missed out on so much football. Like, he didn't even have a preseason. He was injured for that period of time. He went to Sociedad and started training by himself. So yeah, there hasn't been the opportunity for him to get minutes. And when he does get minutes, he's going to be a rock star up top for Liverpool.
Yeah, under a bit of pressure though as well to deliver, because they paid so much money for him. But look, if you're paying that much money, you're going to get
him. You can kind of see
that
in Florian Wirtz as well. Like, it didn't quite happen for him. And, you know, it's crazy to think that people start making judgments of players after two or three games because of the price tag that they've paid. But these players have been brought into Liverpool for a reason. They've gone for, I think, more tried and tested players than Isak and Wirtz than maybe they have done previously, where they've, you know, uncovered a couple of gems and have brought the likes of Mane from Southampton in. I think Wirtz and Isak are going to be brilliant players for Liverpool this season.
Okay, but when you look at last night's scoreline, Liverpool 3, Atletico Madrid 2, and then you look at the goal scorers, Andy Robertson, Mohamed Salah and Virgil van Dijk, they're the old guys.
They were. I mean, the first was a fluke. It was a
still a goal.
Yeah, it was a very wayward free kick that Salah hit and comes off Andy Robertson's backside and finds its way into the back of net.
They're second, the best type.
They are. The second goal from Salah was just Salah at his best, coming in off the line, looking for that bounce pass off Gravenberch. The strength, the pace and the balance that he shows before slotting this beyond Oblak was brilliant. And that is absolutely what you would want to see from Salah, because if you're looking at the first couple of weeks, not being, you know, trademark Salah, hasn't had the same sort of fluidity about his play. Maybe people saying that he's missing Trent from behind with the balls that he supplied him with. But last night, that goal will give you so much confidence that he can go on, he can continue to produce the numbers that he has done in seasons gone by. I mean, the penalty against Burnley on the weekend would have helped, but the goal last night was just Salah at his best coming in off that line, and certainly won that slot will be looking to see over the next couple of weeks. But you mentioned the old reliables, Marie. I think ultimately, if Liverpool are to win titles this year, it's going to be that spine of the team, of experience in particular. Alisson, Van Dijk, even McAllister in the middle of the pitch, Salah at the top end of the pitch. They're the players who know how to win trophies. They're the people who've got yourself over the line in previous years, and they're the ones that you're going to be leaning on.
You mentioned Gravenberch there and the role that he's playing. He's turned into such an important player for them, Paul, hasn't he?
He certainly has. And after his first season, I'm sure there was a lot of Liverpool fans who thought, does he fit in here? Does he have the quality to really anchor the midfield and be that driving force going forward? Ever since Slot has come into the building, he's just been a different player. I don't know if it's the Dutch connection. I don't know if it's the fact that he needed 12 months under his belt before he really got going. But he has a bit of everything. He's got so much power within, you know, the first 5-10 yards that he can glide past players. Technically brilliant. He's obviously got a massive presence that he can get around the pitch. And he's ultimately become, you know, as important as Szoboszlai within the middle of the park. I think when they both play, McAllister anchors the midfield, they've got great balance across that midfield three. But he's certainly somebody who's popped up with important goals, man of the match appearances in some of the games that I've seen him. And even when you see him in the Dutch jersey, like, he just looks such a presence in the middle of the park that they're almost playing around him and looking for him to kind of connect between the back four and the front three.
Okay, so let's move on to Chelsea and Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich getting a 3-1 win over Chelsea there. It seemed like there was a lot of errors in that Chelsea performance, and then the big players that you'd expect capitalise, the likes of Harry Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane was brilliant, I thought, his general play. I mean, I mentioned last night, he's into his mid-30s. He maybe doesn't have that same sort of power over 5 yards that he did previously, but I thought he was excellent last night. Just the way he received the ball, his distribution, his passing, everything was just on point. But ultimately, you know, the 3-1 scoreline was down to the fact that Chelsea made just criminal errors that you just cannot do against top European sides. And we've seen evidence of that within the Premier League over the last 12 months, coughing up terrible goals. I mean, the penalty that they gave away, I don't know what Saicedo's doing. Coughing up possession first and foremost, but then making just a daft tackle on the edge of the 18-yard box to bring Kane down. And ultimately, he goes and scores from the penalty spot. And then the second Kane goal, again, Chelsea coughing up possession in and around their 18-yard box, and Kane puts it away brilliantly. And it's a shame, Marie, because if you look at the Cole Palmer goal, it's so well worked. They do so well to create the space. It's a brilliant 1-2 between Gusto and Palmer. Palmer feeds it into the top corner, and they have to work so hard for that chance. And then they cough up just silly chances. And when you do that against the top teams, you're ultimately going to get punished. And maybe it's a case that there's not a huge amount of Champions League experience within that Chelsea squad. Maybe they will learn as they get through the league phase. But for the price tag of some of these players, I mean, Saicedo has a lot of Premier League experience. There's a lot of experience within some of the players who played last night. They should be doing better. But you asked me at the beginning of the season, where did I see Chelsea finish? Could I make a case for them contesting at the top end of the Premier League and maybe in Europe? Ultimately, I said no, and that was to do with the back four. And the back four is going to continue to cost them until they beef up there. Louis Cole was out injured.
Chalabar, not easy to get defenders either. A lot of teams are looking for them.
Yeah, and what annoys me is that teams are looking for defenders who can play before they even think about how they can defend. And you look at Tosin last night, and his distribution is decent out of the back, and he can find balls into midfield. But whenever he's in a 1v1 situation, he's a tall man, and he looks like a giraffe from roller skates, and players are running at him. He really does. Chalabar, sent him out and loaned to Crystal Palace last year, and now he's starting in your back four. Does he have the quality to be a top four centre half? I don't think so. He's a good player, but he's not got that sort of steel to get you over the line. They have to beef up in that area, and there's still always going to be question marks, I think, about Sanchez and goal.
Looking at Bayern, do they look like a team that can go far in this tournament? Because that for them will be the measure of success.
I don't think so. I thought Chelsea had decent spells last night, and I think a better team would probably carve Bayern open. If you think like a Liverpool or a Paris Saint-Germain, those types of teams who have such quality in the final third, I think they would break Bayern Munich down. Now, they weren't missing a lot of players last night, in fairness to them. Davies wasn't around, Musiala wasn't around, and a couple of players had to come off injured early on in that game. So you could maybe make a case that they will improve as they get those players back into the team. But I don't think they are at the same level of particularly, say, a Real Madrid, a Paris Saint-Germain, a Barcelona. I don't see them at that level just yet. Now, that might change, and maybe under Vincent Kompany they'll produce this year. But even when I looked at them last year, like, I never really thought that they were that outfit that would go on and ultimately win big titles on big European nights. Maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I just don't see them at that level.
Okay, there's a few games on this evening as well. There's the huge one between Newcastle United and Barcelona. Barcelona will be without Lamine Yamal, though. Let's hear from Eddie Howe now on how he's preparing to face Barcelona.
It is a historic fixture. I think it's one that, as soon as we realised we were drawn against Barcelona, it had a sort of a magical feel to it. I think it'll be an amazing game to experience. Yeah, obviously we've been focusing on the tactical preparation and making sure we deliver a good performance. And yeah, I'm really excited to sample the atmosphere. I mean, I think that will just be an incredible thing again.
Eddie, two seasons ago, the PSG game, you sort of set the benchmark for you. Would you like tomorrow night to do the same for you again?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's things we can certainly take from that game, but of course there's things we can take from that experience, the whole thing. Ultimately, we didn't progress beyond the group stage. That was a big disappointment. So I think we can use those experiences to help us. I think for this individual game, which is all we can focus on, is trying to get a positive result, is trying to prepare the players for the game. We're looking forward to seeing how we play against them and how we match up as a team. Certainly, whoever they play, they've got real pace in wide areas. We know that. They've got international players that will challenge us in different ways. So I think structurally, our team performance has got to be really strong. I think we've got to defend well in wide areas. So yeah, we're looking forward to that battle.
That was Eddie Howe speaking about facing Barcelona this evening. Paul, do you think that they're going to be able to match up to them?
I think they'll give a real good go of it. And what Newcastle will do against Barcelona is be really physical in your face. They'll probably try prevent them from getting into that sort of fluid football that they like to play. So they'll certainly pull it up to them. It's a real shame that Lamelle's not playing. You know, you want to see him on these big European nights. What it will mean, though, is Rashford will probably start. Barcelona are absolute box office to watch. They were brilliant in the Champions League last year. They were so unlucky in the semi-final when they got knocked out by Inter Milan. Under Hansi Flick, they play a brilliant brand of football, really high line when from defensively, and then make the pitch lovely, big and wide when they have it. So that'll be a brilliant game to watch. I think Newcastle will give them a really good run for the money. I'd back a draw if I was looking at any sort of result in that game.
Man City are hosting Napoli. Is that the fixture that they need, do you think, when they're getting up and going again?
Yeah, maybe. It's hard to judge, isn't it, when you're kind of comparing the Italian teams to the Premier League and the standard that potentially this side is at. I mean, Napoli have started the league quite well. It's obviously the return of Kevin De Bruyne back to the Etihad. Be interesting to see how the likes of Hoyland and McTominay get on within that team. But the Premier League is, in my eyes anyway, a couple of levels above Serie A, and you would expect that Haaland and co and Manchester City, and hopefully building on the momentum of the weekend, will produce a level performance that would be good enough to beat a Napoli side. Guardiola's searching for something. I know the performance was good against Manchester United in the weekend. They look good in spells. Phil Foden look really good on the weekend. So you're looking to build on that and get the same sort of performances from the likes of Doku and Haaland, and see, can you find that little bit of momentum to kind of kickstart again? Because they haven't quite hit the levels that we saw from City probably 18, 24 months ago, where they were really at it, dominating games, pinning teams back. Anytime they lost possession, they seemed to sniff it out and get it back within 4 or 5 seconds. There's still a few question marks about City as a defensive unit. You can get at them. I'm just not sure if Hoyland and Co are the team who are going to really exploit that.
There are two other games at 8 o'clock this evening as well. Eintracht Frankfurt are hosting Galatasaray, and Sporting are hosting Kired Almaty. It's halftime. The two early games, Club Brugge are leading 3-0 against Monaco, and Copenhagen have a 1-0 lead over Bayer Leverkusen. Paul will be keeping an eye on all of that. We are turning our attention now, though, to women's football and Athlone Town and their European adventure, which came to an end last night. They lost their second leg 3-0 to Glasgow City, 6-0 on aggregate. And Rebecca Cray joins us now on the line to talk us through how it went. Another tough night for Athlone Town. Rebecca, what went wrong?
Hi, Marie. Yeah, most definitely. Look, it was always going to be an uphill battle going into, you know, the second leg, coming in after the 3-0 deficit from the first leg. Look, I think it was just the levels shown and Glasgow City set up, you know, at loan set up, obviously, with their three usual starters on the bench, and Maddie Gibson, Shauna Brennan and Roisin Malloy, obviously, given they've a tough run in there with the league coming up. But look, I think there's a few defensive errors for at loan early on, you know, that kind of seep through into the second half as well. And I think that Emily Whelan goal just before halftime seemed to just, you know, kick them in the stomach, and they were very much down and out on their feet. You know, and I think when those substitutions were made with the Maddie Gibson coming in with Shauna and Roisin Malloy, it just was that little too late. You know, they did try to bring that little bit of flair and excitement, but I think defensively Glasgow were a brick wall and just shone through in the end.
Okay, let's get some reaction to that result. Kayleigh Shine and John Sullivan spoke to Tony O'Donoghue after the game.
Yeah, I suppose it wasn't easy coming into the competition. You know, you're 3 goals down already, so we did have our mindset on getting the first goal back, but I think it was tough for ourselves. We've had a lot of games in the past couple of weeks, I think 4 games in the space of 2 weeks, so a lot of tired legs out there. We did kind of change up the team a little bit, which I fully agree with John's decision there. You know, they need to get a run at it as well, and they come in and they help as much as they can. And I suppose it was tough. I think the first leg away, we didn't think it was a 3-0 defeat, and tonight was a little bit different. I think we're a little bit tired, and best we expected when we're playing in such big competitions with the league and the cup to look ahead to. And I suppose in this competition as well, it's not easy to take it all on board all at once. John's been great since he's come in, to be fair to him. He's really understood all the players, knows that we have our own way. You know, we're not going to start changing what we normally do now. Tisha's in, trying to help us out, good training sessions, cutting first 11 on the pitch, making the decisions halfway through.
The girls have played Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, came on Saturday again. You know, as we spoke to the girls, if you want to get to this level next year, you've got to go now and get your bread and butter, which is the league games coming up.
Big prize for you because you made it to the cup final. You're leading the league by a point, but there's five big games left.
Yeah, of course. You know, this is the end of the season where every player wants to be at, and this is where you put the hard yards in the pre-season. And the girls are at it right now, so they're quite well aware that every game is a big game.
There's a vacancy in the hot seat, if you like. You took over in the time of crisis, you might say, for the club. We'd be interested in this manager position on a full-time basis.
Look, as I mentioned, who wouldn't, you know, it is a great role. It's a great club. I'm very grateful that Ian Ryan, who was working with the men's in the men's team, had encouraged me to, you know, go ahead with it. So I'm very grateful for Ian and Stephen and Nick giving me the thumbs up. We haven't talked about next year. I'm not going to lie, we haven't talked about next year. We just talked about between now and the end of the season. So that's how we're focusing on.
You've got a very good squad here.
Yeah, it's a great squad. It's a great squad. The players are great, as I mentioned. The kids are coming up, they're great as well. However, you know, it's one of those, if it's not broken, don't fix it. But just because it's working doesn't mean you can't upgrade it. So we are looking at Glasgow. They're another level, and a level we will want to get to.
That was John Sullivan and Kayleigh Shine speaking to Tony after last night's loss for Athlone Town. Listening to John Sullivan there, Rebecca, it does sound like he wants the job, and if he does go on and win the league, I'm sure Shelburne will have something to say about that, and the cup. It'll be very hard not to get for him to get it.
Most definitely. I think he played it down at the start, but myself and yourself both know John. He loves the game, and I'm pretty sure, look, if they come out in a bit of glory this year, he'd be chomping at the bit to get back involved with them next year. But yeah, look, it's been a tough few weeks for them. You know, they mentioned there they've had four games over 2 weeks as well. You know, playing at these high levels in European football, along with, you know, the league campaign and obviously the FAI Cup semis as well, and thrown in there for good measure. It does take its toll. Look, they can't feel too hard done by. They got by Cardiff City, you know, ZNK Agram, and also Red Star Belgrade. So they've given a good account of themselves. You know, there's still a few weeks left in the league campaign as well. So look, they'll turn their full focus to that, no doubt, and yeah, push on.
It's such a tight league campaign. Just give our listeners a bit of context on how tight it is at the top. And also, when are Shelburne Athlone meeting? It must be pretty soon.
Yeah, 27 September, yeah, that refixture game. So that'll be one I'm sure everyone will be having eyes on. But really tight at the top. You know, they're on top at the minute, Athlone with 43 points, Shelburne on 42. But Athlone have that game in hand, you know. So it's definitely going to be a run-in to watch. I know it's probably similar to the 2021 league campaign. I don't know if you remember that when Shelburne won it on the last day of the season. So, look, it's probably going to be one of them that'll go down to the wire. You know, Athlone still have tough fixtures coming up. They've P-mount to play. Shelburne seem to have a tough few fixtures to come as well. So, yeah, look, the next few weeks will definitely be interesting, to say the least.
Definitely. And that is the way that we like it, Rebecca, with everything still to play for. You can't beat an all title race. Before we finish up, Rebecca, there was news today that the 2026 League of Ireland season is going to feature a new Women's Development League. All 12 current SSE or Tristy Women's Premier Division clubs are going to field under 23 teams, and they'll be joined by 10 clubs currently participating in the EA Sports League of Ireland Academy Development Programme. Is this a good move?
Yeah, I'm intrigued, to be honest. You know, obviously we're always crying out for more to be done. You know, we're crying out in the last few years for this under 23s Ireland squad to be pushed, you know, and I think this might be the start of it. You know, and also a first division, let's just say, for the National League. You know, you have the likes of Cove Ramblers coming in, Drogheda United, Finn Harps, Kerry, Longford Town. All these teams, you know, that we obviously don't have senior setups for at the minute. So it'll be interesting to see how that does develop and act as that pathway into, you know, senior football, obviously giving them the opportunity to fully develop then into the senior side of things. So, look, I'd like to be positive about it and hope that it will grow the league and grow domestic football here in this country. It just takes that little bit of backing now from the association to follow through. And look, we still have got a lot of things going on within the League of Ireland women's side of things now, that, you know, facilities, we're crying out for that. How long, Marie? You know, the grassroots side of things. But listen, it's promising. It's great for that pathway, and also then, you know, you're looking at relegations or promotions then as we further on into the League of Ireland women's side.
Yeah, I guess just on a surface level, looking at the spread of teams, it is, and as someone who's from Clare and there wasn't much opportunity to play football, it's brilliant that there will be pockets around the country where girls who are looking for an opportunity to progress, will be able to find a team who is in this league. And that itself, yeah, I think, is brilliant, that you can actually go out your front door and say, right, I don't have to sit in the car and drive for 3 hours to play at the level that I'm at, that there are going to be teams now around.
Completely, yeah. Like, as you mentioned there, obviously in Clare, you know, and across the nation, you know, I think predominantly women's football has been dominated by Dublin mm-hmm. sides over the years, you know, and now you have that spread, even up as far as Finn Harps, you know, there's no representation from up that top of, you know, the top of the country. You know, and obviously you have the likes of Kerry now getting involved, you know, Mayo back yeah. involved. We had Castlebar Celtic back in the day, but it's great to see they'll have some representation in there. Yeah, so look, really exciting times. I hope that it does progress us even further, and that can only do great things domestically and hopefully then internationally as well.
Exactly. That's all we want. Rebecca Cray, thank you so much for all of that. We're going to take a very quick break, but stay with us though. We'll be updating you on the Champions League. We might even have a little bit of team news, and we'll also be talking US sports with Jeff Shepherd.
This is 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome along, or should I say welcome back. We are looking at the Champions League team news ahead of the Newcastle-Barcelona game in the company of Paul Carey. So, Paul, who have we got?
Well, just to give you the Man City lineup, same team that started the Manchester derby on the weekend for Napoli, of Hoyland, De Bruyne and McTominay all involved for Napoli. Looking then to Newcastle against Barcelona, it's the usuals, I guess, the players that you would expect from a Newcastle perspective. One, and an interesting one from our perspective, is young Alex Murphy.
Oh, from Galway.
Well, I say young. Yeah. He's 21 years of age now, but he's on the bench for Newcastle.
Very good. A left back, or left centre back.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marcus Rashford starts. It's crazy to think that Rashford starts at Barcelona after everything, isn't it?
Well, let's see how he plays. Yeah. Then we'll assess it.
I think he does well in that system. He's certainly surrounded by better players.
That helps.
Than he was at both Aston Villa and Manchester United. So yeah, that'll be a cracking game.
Right, we are now going to talk to Jeff Shepherd about lots of NFL stories that are happening. Our own one happening in Dublin very, very soon. And we are building up very much so here in Dublin to the Steelers against the Vikings. That's taking place, if you've been living under a rock, in Croke Park on September 28th. And we're getting lots of news about all the things that are going to be happening around the city. All I can say is there are going to be a lot of parties and a lot of big events. Jeff Shepherd is not coming over for this one, though. Shep, maybe another time. But before we get to that, we do need to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and what is happening there. What is going wrong that we're in a situation that they haven't won a game this season?
You know, Marie, life comes at you fast. I don't think it's really not an ideal situation for anyone in week one to play an international game, you know, and they played mm-hmm. in Brazil, which also, again, not a typical location for these international games. And it's a division opponent, which is, you know, so you see them at least twice a year. Sometimes there's, you know, a playoff rematch or, you know, so.
So you're blaming the location and the opposition.
Well,
go on.
But I mean, look, it's really just what's going on the field. I mean, we've kind of talked about, you know, the mystique and the magic of Patrick Mahomes. No one denies mm-hmm. that. Right. But at some point, I mean, the guy needs some help. Right. And so you've got Rashee Rice, the wide receiver, who's suspended for the first six games of the season. And then Xavier Worthy, who's going to be the next top target. He gets hurt early on in the first game and he doesn't play in either matchup. And so now, you know, you're kind of down the line and maybe your most reliable receivers are, you know, as we've said before, a 35 or 36 year old tight end who's kind of got a whole other thing happening in his life, you know, and then they've got mm-hmm. virtually no running game whatsoever and a young offensive line. So, you know, I heard a stat. I mean, look, people have been talking about this over here in America, in the American sports, you know, talk world. I mean, this is definitely a topic, you know, this week. And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, the Chiefs were averaging 27, 28 points a game, you know, consistently. They're averaging 21 right now. I mean, and that makes a big difference, as you know. I mean, look, you know, newsflash. So, I mean, that's the main thing. It's sometimes it's just real simple, Marie. They're just not scoring enough points. And so it's like, how are they going to get back to doing that? They've just kind of almost just been figuring, oh, don't worry, Mahomes has got it. He'll take care of it. He normally does. He normally has it. He normally takes care of it, but he can't do it all himself. I mean, he's their best runner through the first 2 weeks of the season, which is not good.
No, and is it a concern? Like, is it... am I going too far saying it's a decline of a dynasty, or is that just too much worry?
Well, look, no, I mean, look, we've spoken about this a bunch over the last couple of years, Marie. It is hard to make the playoffs if you start 0-2, even though it's got a little bit easier when they add that 17th game. But it's still pretty difficult to make the playoffs at 0-2. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think they're completely panicking right now. But, you know, we've kind of joked also, like, the floor for these guys has been the AFC Championship game for the last, like, five seasons. You know, there's three Super Bowl wins and a Super Bowl loss. And, you know, just a bad year for them is they make it to the NFL semifinals. So, I mean, anything short of that, yes, it's going to be considered, you know, a complete and utter failure. I don't necessarily think that's completely the case. It's not like Mahomes is shot and it's over. But, I mean, the way we've been talking about these guys for the last better part of a half of a decade, if not longer, just seems completely gone. You know, I mean, maybe we do that later this year when they get a full complement of receivers back or something. But right now, they are a long way away from the team that even got blown out in the Super Bowl. They're a long way away from those guys.
Well, we've been talking about Man City and the decline of the dynasty there. So, look, these things happen, Shep. We hope that it doesn't because, as you said, there's still a lot of players in their pomp. So we'll see how it goes. Jeff Shepherd, as always, thank you so much for chatting to us. And we look forward to talking to you next Thursday as we will continue on our build up to that huge game in Crow Park between the Steelers and the Vikings. Thanks so much, Shep.
All right, Murray. Thank you.
Okay, well, that is it for us for this evening. Just to bring you those scores, it's Club Brugge 3, Monaco 0, Copenhagen 1, Bayer Leverkusen. They're the two early Champions League games. 50-odd minutes played in both of them. Paul Carey, thank you for coming in to studio. Stephen Higgins was on BCO. Ronan Lawler produced. I'll be back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. I'm going to preview the sporting weekend ahead, and it is a big one. I'll be in the company of Alan Cawley, as I am every Friday. Fergal Brennan will also chat football with us. Katie Kirk is going to come back again and talk about the World Athletics Championships. Jane Mangan will also be in to talk about racing. Stay with us on 2FM as next it's the new music show.
This is 2FM.